topic I have for you here today is how do I get that first client? So I'm going to walk through that here in some detail. And I guess to set the stage in terms of who we're talking about getting that first client, I believe if memory serves on the context that we're talking about, a freelancer. And so that's a little bit different than maybe if you were starting a new business and you had some entrepreneurship experience, or you were trying to start like a boutique consulting business or something like that. So I'm going to assume the majority of people watching this are probably either employed or maybe right out of school. They're hanging out their shingle to freelance. So you're going to not have a lot of experience, and you're going to be looking to do some kind of general technician work. And what I mean by that is white collar labor, if you will. So maybe graphic design, software engineering, content writing, something along those lines. I guess the general reason for structuring it this way is just because, like, that's I think more common to the audience, and a little easier without boiling the ocean to talk about what I would do. So that in mind, let's get to it. The very first thing I would do if you have no clients and you're looking to get that first one is, if you are currently employed, try to line up your employer as your first client. That is absolutely the easiest thing to do. I spent a lot of my career in the world of software, and in software engineering, generally, it's been quite a good lucrative market that doesn't experience a lot of lulls in demand. So if you're working as a software engineer and you're doing a pretty good job, it will typically be fairly straightforward for you to make a pitch to keep on in a contract type capacity for a while. It's not a guarantee. There's nothing to say that will always happen, but it's a decent possibility. And in general, if you're, you know, whatever it is you might be doing, if you're a valued employee, the odds of this are decent. Some companies might have a policy against it. Maybe your boss just doesn't appreciate that you're talking about resigning or whatever. So it's no guaranteed thing, but that can be the easiest thing to do. If you're going to go this route, I would strongly recommend that you don't just flip over into being a 40-hour per week contractor, tempting as though that may be. Because if you do that, you're essentially just kind of recasting yourself as an employee, but with like a different kind of structure. Meaning, if you're working 40 hours a week, it's easy for business to just to continue as usual on both sides. And then you're not really developing a practice, and you might be getting a higher hourly rate from them than you would as an employee, but you're going to be, you know, paying for your own health insurance and all sorts of other things. So it'll probably be something of a wash. So if you're going to do this, do it in a more limited capacity so that you're kind of forcing yourself to find other clients. You don't just want to change the terms of engagement with your current employer. So let's say that doesn't work. I'm going to go through these things, if I didn't mention this, in kind of like the order of likelihood or priority that I would give. So, you know, the most likely to succeed, go with that first to get that first client. And each thing is getting a little bit more desperate as we go down the ladder. But the first handful of these are pretty solid. So I would think one of these will probably land you a client. The next thing is, I would say, setting aside your current employer, mine any past employers for contracting opportunities, assuming it was like relatively recently and you still know people there. So any employers you've had maybe over the last 5-7 years, whatever it may be, do you have a boss that's still there, or a skip level that's still there, people that know you still there? That's a really easy thing to reach out and do. And the more recent your experience there, the more likely this is, because it'd be fairly straightforward for you to go back, and I'm speaking from software development because that's what I know, to reach out to somebody you were employed by 2 years ago where you still probably know the code base and how things work, and say, hey, you know, if you need anyone to pitch in when you're coming into a crunch, or to, like, you know, go into break fix mode, fix bugs after a release or whatever the case may be, I can take on some extra work. That tends to be a pretty good opportunity. You're a known commodity, and there's a lot of value for an organization to having known commodities that are available on a part-time, on and off basis. Typically, if you're going to do something like this, especially if it's like, you know, plug-in, break-fix type work, or like work during a crunch, you'll have to accept the idea that for that to be attractive to that employer, you'll have to work on their terms, meaning it's not going to be something where you're like, I want 10 hours a week from you forever. And they're like, yeah, that's okay. So the thing I talk about sometimes is when I first started freelancing many years ago, I thought that like going freelance might mean that I'd line up four different clients, each would give me 10 hours a week or something. That's not really the way it's going to work out. If you're going to be doing part-time labor and they're using you instead of an employer or an employee, they're typically going to want to be able to flex up and down. That's the attractiveness of a part-time contractor. They'll give you work when there's extra work to be done, and then they don't have to pay you when there isn't. So they're not going to give you as much stability if you're signing on for this type of flexibility. Now, it could be that you're just kind of boomeranging an old employer with a contract arrangement, meaning maybe current employer says, no, I don't want to do that. You reach out to the job before that and they say, sure, I'll give you, you know, if you work at least 30 hours a week. So it's not to say that the only way you would have a contract opportunity like this is with like overages or whatever, but that's a likely scenario. So basically reach out to those old bosses, especially if they're people that you like, those old skip levels, contacts at former companies, and see if they have anything for you. And that's quite likely to work, because if you have a good relationship with them, if you have worked with them at length in the past, they know they can just deploy you without, you know, interviewing you or having a lot of risk that you're going to suck or what have you. If that doesn't work, and it may well not, especially if you worked at the same place for like 10 years or if you've never, you know, worked at a company before, the next thing I would suggest is expand that list of colleagues a little bit. So it's not just former bosses and former employers, but like look on your LinkedIn and all your connections for people that you know and have worked with in the past. Those could be coworkers, they could be subordinates, they could be superiors. Look at wherever they've gone. Maybe they're not working at the same company that you worked with them at, and make a big list of those people. Because if they have good opinions of you and good things to say about you, it might not be quite as straightforward as just going back and doing work for a former employer. But if you've got people in there vouching for you in various capacities, that's a much easier sell. And there's going to be a lot more of these types of people too, and they're probably going to be receptive to wanting to help you. Now, the way I would suggest networking with these people, so to speak, like don't go and beg for work or, make it as minimally like doing you a favor as possible, and don't exude desperation. It should be more like, hey, I'm starting a new freelance practice. You know, we've worked together in the past. I'm kind of trying to find my niche and find what I'm doing. You know, do you have any thoughts? If you know of any available work opportunities, I would appreciate it. But sort of position yourself that you're in, I'm starting this practice and I'm feeling out what's out there. I would appreciate your advice. People like being asked for advice. That's a good way to do it. You know, as opposed to doing something along the lines of, hey, I just got fired. I really need money. I mean, like you probably wouldn't say things like this, but just to reach out and say like, I'm looking for opportunities. Can you help me or whatever? You want to, maintain the relationship, like, hi, how are you? You might float it out there like, hey, by the way, if there's anything I can do for you. So try to make it as if you're doing market research, which you should probably be. If you're deliberately hanging out your shingle, you ought to be doing market research and try to line up things before you leap out on your own. So you're just kind of, like subtly asking for a favor, but more like trying to see what's out there. You know, hey, do you know of anything? And keep in mind that you've got some value to offer. So it's not just a one-way street there. And if people like you and have worked with you in the past and are willing to vouch for you, they'll often view it as a good way to do somebody a favor or like even bring you into their company in some capacity to do work so that they get to work with you again. So, that list of, and maybe this goes without saying, but if you think they don't like you or don't respect you or they give you a bad performance review, probably skip those people. Stick to the people you think have a favorable view of you. And try to cultivate people like that. You know, don't screw people over and do bad work. That's going to make all of this harder. Make sure it's people that you're pretty sure have a favorable opinion of you. If that doesn't work, the next thing I would try is broaden that, like networking, to your friends and family. When you go off on your own and you hang out that shingle and you're first getting started, people love to root for somebody who, you know, sticks it to the man and goes off on their own. There's a lot of, I think, empathy there. So you're leaving the job, you're pursuing your dream of self-employment, and your friends and your family are rooting for you. You're an underdog at that moment and they really want to help you. So you can tap into that. And I've often heard it said that there's kind of a like first year honeymoon where everybody's really going out of their way to help you because you've got a new business and they want to see you succeed. So tap into that. Now, if you're going to do that, one thing that's different from everything I've mentioned so far is your friends and family probably aren't going to understand super well what you do. Former colleagues that you work with will be like, oh yeah, you know, Susan is just the person you need for, like, you know, this specialized form of Rails development or whatever. Your friends and family are not going to know that in language. So you're going to have to come up with a way that they can pitch you pretty easily to people. For a technician, that's often, you know, I'm a software engineer, I'm a graphic designer. So then your friends and family can say, you know, Susan is a graphic designer, do you need that? It's even better if you can get more specific. But basically, you know, imagine this person who doesn't understand what you do super well, trying to explain you to people who they think might need your services. So you want to grease the skids for that as much as possible, make that conversation easy for them to have. For two reasons. Number one, it'll make it more likely that that connection takes off. And number two, it'll make it more likely that they actually help you. Because if you reach out to them and say, hey, I'm looking for work, and I do, and then you insert all sorts of jargon that your friend or family member can't understand, what they will most likely do is nod politely. And then just, even though they want to help you, never make a mention of you because they just don't know what to do. You've given them this really difficult homework assignment. So give them an easy way to introduce you to people, and that should work. And I think in the overwhelming majority of cases, the sequence of steps I've laid out so far will work. If they don't, you know, it's not to say that you're necessarily doing things wrong. At the time of recording, everybody in Silicon Valley seems to be panicking about a recession. So, you know, maybe it's a recession, but whatever it is, there might be exceptions to the situation, but these are kind of the big ones that are most likely to land you that first client. So moving on, I guess the thing I would recommend next, if none of that works, you don't have a lot of people, you don't have a wide network, maybe you're new in your career, so you just don't have those things as much. That's when I would recommend going on a labor brokerage site potentially and kind of putting yourself out there. And so that's like Upwork or TopTal or whatever, you know, the type of sites where you put yourself up and it's kind of like a resume for contractors or whatever. And, you know, you get paired with people looking to hire you to do labor. I don't have the best view of labor brokerage sites personally. For YouTube, I'll put up a video about that. But that's more of a long-term thing. So if you need to pay the mortgage in the meantime, or if you're really just getting started, it's fine. You can go create profiles on these sites and respond to requests for proposals that people are putting out there. Try to get yourself hired that way. It is a relatively low effort and kind of high leverage play if you're desperate, meaning you go, you create a profile, and you make yourself findable. So it's a way to create a situation where business might be coming to you, especially if you put your rates as pretty bargain basement, which, by the way, if you're getting into this territory and you're brand new to freelancing, first client, I would consider going pretty bargain basement on your rates because you're not going to have a lot of other ways to distinguish yourself. So being the cheapest can be a way to get into the door and get that first client. You definitely don't want to do that long term. It won't be sustainable, but it can get you at least a notch or two on the, I don't know what metaphor I'm going for here. It can get you a piece of experience or two for your portfolio, and then you can think about increasing your rates from there. The next thing I would suggest, if the labor brokerages aren't working for you, join some communities, maybe where potential consumers of your service would hang out, or at least other practitioners of that service, to try to exchange leads, try to get some leads, and do what's called prospecting. So become a member of these communities, or, you know, go on social media, join certain like hashtags or groups or what have you, and look to forge relationships with other people who are doing what you're doing and or people who consume those services. So if you're doing graphic design, maybe you join some kind of graphic design community with the knowledge that people looking for graphic designers might come in there from time to time. This is a tough one. You can't go into these communities and immediately start spamming them. There will typically, in a community like this or a hashtag or whatever, be ways that you can communicate that you're, you know, available for work, and I would leverage those. But what you're really looking to do here is build some relationships. It's a very labor-intensive activity, prospecting. And what you're really looking to do is find people to talk to that you can learn from or help in some way, even if it's not directly related to what you're doing. So go to that community, be a good citizen, be friendly, try to make friends, Try to figure out how you can help people. Try to forge relationships where you are maybe learning from people either that are prospective buyers or folks that have been doing what you're doing for a while. And really, there are no shortcuts here. So this isn't the kind of thing that you would see, like, you know, how to freelance scammers being like, all right, go in here and execute this playbook. And here's how you simulate adding value. And here's how you simulate being friendly. And here's how you simulate being a good person. The only way to reliably prospect in communities like this is to actually be a friendly, helpful, good person. There are no shortcuts. You will look like a scammer if you go in and try to do some astroturfing nonsense. This is really, really labor intensive. I can't stress that enough. If you go and you hang out in community XYZ, imagine that you're going to be putting in hours per week, maybe even hours per day for weeks or months before that materializes into a solid lead. So this is what I mean. Like, we're pretty far down the list of good ways to land a first client. Prospecting can be really valuable. And you can find ways for it to pay off in the long run, but usually it's going to mean that you've joined that community and been a good citizen there for a long time. Ideally, in parallel with you actually earning a living. And so you become a good citizen over the long haul. And what'll happen is all that effort up front will start to pay off more and more and more. So if you're well known in that community a year in, that's going to actually generate a lot of leads from you because you're going to have a reputation and you're going to have cachet. But to go in there in the first week and be like, hi, I'm new here. By the way, does anybody want to give me money? That won't work. So this is a long tail play. And it's, you know, in desperate territory. But it can work if you're willing to roll up your sleeves and get it done and really stick to it. But you should really be thinking of prospecting more as a long-term strategy to keep leads coming rather than one out of the gate. And then finally, you know, here be dragons. If you find yourself all the way down here, you could always do cold outreach. Or I guess try advertising. I think I've done a video about I wouldn't advertise freelance services. Likewise, I would not try to land business via cold outreach. It is a slog. It will discourage you. It's got a super low likelihood of success. So maybe if you do 1,000 pieces of tailored cold outreach, you might get one sales call. The odds are that bad. So I'd stay away from it, but it can work. You know, maybe you get the right template or you get a service that does it for you. You can give it a shot, but it is not only really low odds of success, it is also incredibly demoralizing. Like if you have never done cold outreach before, my limited experience with trying to do it, you know, where you're sending out messages that you've kind of handcrafted and the best case is that nobody responds to you. The worst case is that somebody responds and they're like, I hate you, leave me alone. I don't have a lot of experience, but I've heard tell of just how demoralizing it is to send out hundreds of messages and get no responses. So it isn't just that it's a low leverage, low likelihood of success type of play. It's also really unpleasant to do. So if you find yourself all the way down at this rung of the ladder, I feel like there's something wrong that you need to address, because that means that, like, nowhere in your network of friends, family, coworkers, colleagues, and past employers is there anyone that can introduce you to any kind of work or who's willing to. So maybe you're not articulating yourself well. Maybe you have such poor interpersonal skills that being in business for yourself isn't likely to work. Maybe you've picked a specialty that's just not at all in demand. Something is probably wrong if you've worked your way all the way down to doing cold outreach. One counterpoint to that, there is somebody who I've been in a mastermind with that has a really interesting perspective, which he said something along the lines once of, if I were going to tease out a new business idea, I would invest in a cold outreach service and send out, you know, like 3,000 pieces of cold outreach. And his reasoning is that cold outreach being kind of the lowest leverage, lowest likelihood of success type play is the one where if you can land some business doing cold outreach, then you know you're onto something. And he has an interesting point in that if you hang out your shingle and you're a very personable person, you've had great personal relationships, even if you don't have the best service delivery or offering or niche, you might get by for a year or two just because people really like you. So they throw you business from time to time. So you can wind up kind of in this zombie business that's never really going to take off or succeed, kind of on the initial grace of people that like you and want to help you and all that. So there is an interesting counterpoint there. Maybe it's a way to I guess, wrap and work back philosophically for all this. So like landing that first client, by hook or by crook, you'll be able to get a client. Typically, you would have to be in a pretty exceptional situation for none of these things to ever land you any business if you're getting the pricing and offering right or what have you. So you do kind of want to evaluate beyond that first client. So how do I get the first client is a great question, but you probably want to be strategically thinking about how do I get that first client and then also that second and that third, and how do I sustain enough clients to earn a living? Because the first one, if that's all you have your eyes on, you might be building an unsustainable practice, or you might be just kind of defaulting back into a form of employment. Like, okay, I've got that first client. They're giving me 40 hours a week. It's an open-ended contract. That situation can lead to, basically recreating employment. So hopefully this helps. I think that, it is valuable for kind of lining up the activities you're going to do when you're hanging out your shingle, and getting that first client is an enormous boost to your morale. So, by all means do that, but look beyond that first client. And as you're working your way down this priority list, if you are not having any luck, then at each rung of the ladder that I just mentioned, it's maybe worth doing a little reflection and retrospection on what you've done so far and what you're offering to see if you are actually doing something that can be a viable business or practice for you. So hopefully that helps, and I will catch you all next time.